traditionally, the shiur before Hanukkah deals with Hanukkah, just as usually the shiur before Purim deals with Purim. Yetz Hashem, next week is Hanukkah, and I think we have to begin by saying that we hope and pray that the Rabbeinu Hashem is going to do for us another Hanukkah miracle. We need great Siyata Dishmaya. It's been a very, very difficult week, extremely difficult. You know, we nearly forget, like all we think about now is Motzei Shabbos Kikar Tzion, and Sunday, a buzz blows up in Haifa. I don't know, one day in Prague, for some reason my cell phone wasn't working. I pick up a Herald Tribune and I see a pigua in Afula. We went out of our minds until we got through to find out that everybody in the family is okay. I have a son, a daughter, and five enikos living in Afula. Until we got through to find out that everything's okay. All right, so we're looking forward to a greatness. Chashmonoi. The miracle of Purim El Hanukkah came through the Chashmonoi. Tradition tells us that the name Chashmonoi, you have it down at the bottom there, Chashmonoi, the Ches, the Shin, and the Mem, stand for three of the major decrees that Greece decreed against the Jewish people. One, they abolished Chodesh. They abolished Rosh Chodesh, minor holiday that they abolished. Second, they legislated against Shmiras Shabbos. And third, they prohibited Bris Milah. I can very well understand why they prohibited Bris Milah, because Bris Milah sets the Jewish people aside as separate, distinct, and unique. And as we will see during the course of the year, their purpose was to blur the differences and, if possible, erase the differences between Klal Yisrael and the rest of the world, or at least between Klal Yisrael and Greece. Shabbos, of course, is a day that encompasses within itself all of the major and fundamental tenets of Jewish creed and belief. That there's a Rabbeinu Shem, that he created the world, that he rested on Shabbos, that there's Hashgacha Pratis, divine providence. Shabbos is, as has been said for a long time, more than Jews kept Shabbos, Shabbos kept the Jews. What did the Greeks want from Rosh Chodesh? What did they want from Rosh Chodesh? You know how thrilled we are that we remember to say Yalla V'Yavo on Rosh Chodesh by davening. And how often do we forget it? Except, of course, when you're in shul and then 10 people start banging, so all of a sudden you know something's happening, and you may remember to say Yalla V'Yavo. To remember yet, to say Yalla V'Yavo in benching, you have to be a Heilig Yid. It's not, Rosh Chodesh, Rosh Chodesh, and people say Akut Mechaydesh and Akut Mechaydesh. Why did it bother Greece? Why does Greece have to legislate against Rosh Chodesh? If they would have legislated against Pesach, I can understand. Pesach, freedom, you know, it arouses a sense of patriotism and closeness to the Jewish people. What Rosh Chodesh? In the past, I had talked about five or six different aspects of Rosh Chodesh. I'm going to deal with four, and one of them is ultimately the particular subject of this year. First, Rosh Chodesh establishes in the mind and the consciousness of Klal Yisrael the centrality of Eretz Yisrael in Jewish life. Now, I will show that in a moment. What they want to do is that what should be central is not Eretz Yisrael, but Greece. Not Har Abayit, but Mount Olympus. They want to infiltrate, assault Klal Yisrael with Greek culture. But this Rosh Chodesh is something that establishes as a principle the centrality of Eretz Yisrael in Jewish life. Number one, we have a piece that is taken from the Rambam in the Sefer HaMitzvahs, Mitzvah 154, the Mitzvah of Sanctifying the New Moon. The Rambam says, V'havein zeh, understand this. Right where it's underlined. The Rambam is positing a certain halacha, and he understands that it's a bit difficult to grasp what he's saying. So he says, Havein zeh, understand this. V'ani yosif l'cho bi'ur, and I'm going to add clarification, so you'll really understand the full import of the halacha. The Rambam says the following. He sets up a situation. Ilu hinachnu derech mashal, if we would assume, for example, shebnei eretz Yisrael ye'odru me'eretz Yisrael. If we would assume a situation in which bnei, the sons of Eretz Yisrael, are absent from Eretz Yisrael. There are no Jews in Eretz Yisrael. Fascinating that the Rambam describes a Jew living in Chutz Laretz as Bnei Eretz Yisrael. I have a feeling the Rambam is saying wherever a Jew is, he's a Ben Eretz Yisrael. So now he's setting up this possibility. Let's assume, Lamassu, for example, that there are no Jews in Eretz Yisrael. The Rambam is going to go on to say that if there are no Jews in Eretz Yisrael, this is going to have very severe halachic consequences. But before he gets to the halacha, he makes a parenthetic comment. One of the most amazing parenthetic comments in the Rambam. And the Rambam sets up, it's just l'moshel, no more than that. Let's assume that there are no Jews in Eretz Yisrael. So the Rambam says, and I believe it was the Chasam Sofer, who writes that when the Rambam wrote this sentence, he began to shudder and tremble at the very thought, and he couldn't continue on with the halacha without making the following statement. Cholila l'kel me'asod zod. God forbid that he should ever do this. Ki hu hiftiach, because he promised, shelo yimache oso sa'uma mikol v'kol. He had promised us that he would not destroy every trace of this nation. So that really what I've set up over here is God forbid it can't ever happen because God promised not to destroy us. What the Rambam is saying in this parenthetic comment is also what happens if there are millions of Jews living in Chutz Laretz who are Shomrei Torah and Mitzvahs. So there are no Jews in Eretz Yisrael. Oy, the Rambam calls that the absence, the total absence of Jews from Eretz Yisrael, the Rambam says, that's a destruction of the Jewish people. And now he goes on to tell us the halacha. V'lo yesham bezdin, there won't be any Jews in Eretz Yisrael, there's no bezdin there. V'lo yeh b'chutz laretz bezdin shenismach baretz, and there won't be in Chutz Laretz a bezdin that had received smicha in Eretz Yisrael. Hinei cheshboneinu ze, our calculation of the calendar, lo yo'i leinu, it will not help us klum at all, b'shum panim, l'fi she'ein lanu chashev chadashim la'aber shonim b'chutz laretz. Rambam is saying, since we cannot calculate months, or make years leap years, in Chutz Laretz, if there's no Jewish community, if there are no Jews in Eretz Yisrael, and in the worst circumstances, if at least there would be a bezdin in Chutz Laretz that had received their smicha, that had lived at that time in Eretz Yisrael. The calculation that we have, remember, we don't decide on the new moon the way they used to decide in the time of the Bet HaMikdash, and even following that. How did they decide on the new moon? Witnesses would come to Bezdin in Yerushalayim and tell them that we saw the new moon, and Bezdin would be Mekadosh the Chodesh. In the 4th century, Chazal saw that they're no longer going to be able to keep up the system of witnesses coming to Yerushalayim. So what they did was, they made a calculation for all generations, so we should be able to figure out the calendar and set up the calendar. But even that, those calculations for the calendar are not operative in the absence of Jews from Eretz Israel. Which means if there's a total absence of Jews from Eretz Israel, there's no calendar, there's no Pesach, there's no Shavuos, there's no Sukkot, there's no Rosh Hashanah, there's no Yom Kippur. We're talking about a situation which is absolutely destructive of the Jewish people. That's all. The Rambam therefore obviously assumes that there will be an uninterrupted Jewish presence in Eretz Israel. So here the whole halacha of Kiddush HaChodesh is predicated on the centrality of Eretz Israel in Jewish life. Without Eretz Israel, there's no calendar. There's no Kiddush HaChodesh. There's nothing. Greece, of course, wants to move the center of the world to Greece, not Eretz Israel. So they have to get rid of Rosh Chodesh. Number two. The Greeks understood that Rosh Chodesh is the means by which there remains a bond between the Jews in Chutz Laretz and the Jews in Eretz Israel. How did that work? For hundreds of years. Beis Din Yerushalayim decides on that today is Rosh Chodesh. How are 4 million Jews that are still in Bavel, how are they going to know that today is Rosh Chodesh? How are they going to know when to make Pesach? How are they going to know? So there was a system. And the system was that they would have people standing on mountaintops all the way from Eretz Israel to Bavel, waiting with torches, ready to light torches, when the signal would come from Har HaBayit, a succession of torches would be lit. And then take a look at number three. The Mishnah says, "Umeayin hoyum asiyin masuas." From where did they lift the torches? Mehar Hamishcha. Har Hamishcha is Har Hazeisim. Now I'm adding another station over here in this Mishnah. The other station is how does Har Hazeisim know that Bezin decided that today is Rosh Chodesh? Because obviously somebody from Har HaBayit signaled Har HaZeisim. So it really starts at Har HaBayit, and then it goes to Har HaZeisim. And from Har HaMishcha, there was a fellow waiting on a mountaintop in Sartava, which was one of the highest mountains in the Shomron. Umi Sartava Ligrufina. Grufina was a high mountain someplace in the Galil. And he lit his torch. Umbi Grufino l'Chavron. Chavron already was a mountain northern Syria. And then from Chavron the Beis Biltin. Beis Biltin already was by the Babylonian border. Umbi Beis Biltin. The fellow who was waving the torch at Beis Biltin didn't move from the place. Elo, he was Molech. Umevi, Mala, Umorid, back and forth, up and down with his torch, Ad Shehoyaroa, Kol HaGolo Lefonav, Kimedurat Eish, until he saw the entire exile before him, like one great flame of fire. Well, let me just dramatize this a little bit, and I think, I don't think it's over dramatization. What do you think Jews were doing in Bavel every month on the 29th day of the month? They would be walking about Bavel doing their business, but their eyes would be looking westward. Most probably in the late morning, there were people already standing on the rooftops looking westward for a message to come from Yerushalayim. And the moment the message would come, there were thousands of people ready with torches and went up onto their rooftops. Do you understand? There were no faxes. There were no phones. There were no other means of communication. But this was a instant means of communication. And it was a message coming to them from Yerushalayim. I once explained this with an example in my own life. About 25 years ago, maybe 30 years ago, I was rabbi in West Hempstead at the time. It was the morning I was getting ready to go teach, and the phone rings, and my wife answers the phone, and as Americans would say over there, she was very mitragation. What's wrong? She says, you have a phone call from Yerushalayim. I mean, these were days before telephones. I didn't get phone calls every day from Yerushalayim. This was probably was the first time in my life that I had a call from Yerushalayim. Really? And I get onto the phone. You have to call from Yerushalayim. So you go through the usual nonsense. My, it sounds so crystal clear. You sound like you're next door. I'm amazed. I was midrageshing at the fact that I'm having direct communication with Yerushalayim. Oh, these things, our kids already have lost this. They'll never know what it means. They'll never know what it means. Every month, 4 million Jews in Babel got a direct message from Yerushalayim. And the Rambam, in fact, says that all of this is based on the Pasuk Ki Mitzion Teitze Torah U'Dvar Hashem Yerushalayim. Dvar Hashem comes from Yerushalayim. Tremendous. It was the talk. Now we know it's Rosh Chodesh. We got a message. It's Keilu. I can imagine already what's going on in Yerushalayim. Bezin just said Mekudesh HaChodesh Mekudesh, and the message comes. So Rosh Chodesh was the means for hundreds of years by which there was direct connection between Eretz Yisrael in general, Yerushalayim in particular, with the Golah. Greece wants to sever the relationship between those two communities. In a sense, divide and conquer. They want to deal with the Jews in Eretz Yisrael first. And therefore they decree against Rosh Chodesh. Number three. This already Chazal saying so many midrashim, that our calendar is according to the moon. Why? Why is our calendar according to the moon? Because the moon is really representative of Klal Yisrael, representative of the history of Klal Yisrael. It's the model. The moon, it rises, becomes full, it gets smaller, dark, and you think it's gone. It has disappeared. And just when you think that the moon has disappeared, it reappears and begins to grow again. That's Jewish history. Jewish history goes through these cycles of growth, development, strength, a deterioration, but never disappearance. Because Klal Yisrael, being compared to the moon, never despair. Those civilizations that reached the point of despair disappeared. Klal Yisrael never despaired, so they never disappeared. Because their nimshal, they are light to look on like the moon. Which means the idea of Kiddush HaChodesh and the relationship with the moon is something that always, always inspired Klal Yisrael to remember that they have a guarantee from the Rebbeinu Shel Olam, as the Rambam said, Shelo yimocha also sa'umo mikol mivelndi chevre eichit ibeleben. We are going to overcome them as well, and Jews, a good Yid would have been able to predict that when Greece is long, long gone, we are still going to remain a strong, a viable, and a powerful people. That's number three. Number four is the one that I want to deal with at a little bit greater length. Greece had to outlaw Rosh Chodesh. They had to outlaw Rosh Chodesh because Rosh Chodesh was a reminder month by month, and in a sense it became the pledge allegiance of Klal Yisrael to whom? To the authority of Sanhedrin. There's a Beis Din, there are Chachmei Yisrael, there are Gedolei Torah, there are Rabbanim, there are Rosh Yeshiva, there are those who carry the Mesorah from Sinai until that day and until every day in history. As long as you have Jews remaining absolutely firm in their loyalty to Mesorah, Greece will not make inroads. The Mishnah, number two, the Mishnah says, Rosh Bezdin Omer Mekudosh, after the witnesses have been cross-examined and we find that what they've said is correct, Rosh Bezdin, the head of the Bezdin, says, Mekudosh V'chol Ha'am, all the people were gathered out there, and they would answer after him, Mekudosh, Mekudosh. This was all over again, a pledge of absolute allegiance to Torah Yisrael, to Torah Sinai, not only Torah Shebechtav, but Torah Shebaalpeh. Everything. Greece will make no headway with a people who remain firmly rooted in the Masorah community. They have to sever that relationship with Masorah. And the means to do it, or the means to begin doing it, is by removing Rosh Chodesh. They were smart. They were smart. They knew exactly what to do. But there was a phenomenon that took place in the days of Golus Yavan that was unknown before that. And that's the phenomenon I want to talk about. Something that bothered me for a long time, and then I found that Yitzhak Hutner, Zecher Tzadik L'Vracha, speaks about it in two essays in Tachat Yitzchak on Chanukah, and we'll put it all together and see what comes up. It's one simple question. There was a Golus Bavel, there was a Golus Ashur. Ashur took Jews off into captivity. There was a Golus of Mitzrayim. In Mitzrayim, we never had mit matzvim. In Ashur, we never had mit ashrim. In Babel, we never had mit bavlim. Yavon, you have mit yavnim. A new phenomenon. A painful phenomenon. Jews, long before Stockholm, are suffering from the Stockholm syndrome. There are Jews who become loyal to the enemy, the conqueror, the occupying force. There are people who go over to the side of Rome, of Greece. How does this happen? What's different about this Golus than all of the previous ones? What happened here? What changed over here? And we're going to see that the problem of Mityavnim began with the Greek Golus, but did not end with the Greek Golus. It remains an ugly phenomenon in every age. Ad Hayom Hazeh. Ad Hayom Hazeh, today, mamash. Let's see a number of midrashim. The medrash in number four, third line. Kasher yanus ish mipnei ha'ari. That's a pasuk from Amos, which is in number seven. Second line there. The Navi Amos says, Kasher yanus ish mipnei ha'ari, as a man flees from before a lion, upigo'o hadov, and he meets up with a bear, Ubo Habayit. He finally comes into the house, the Samach Yadav Alakir, and he leans with his hand against the wall to rest, Unishacho HaNochosh, and the snake bites him. Back to the Medrash says, Kashiyonos Ishmitnei Ari Zu Bavel. The Ari, the lion, is Bavel. Al Shem Kavmiso Ka'aryeh. In Daniel it says, the first of the beasts that he saw was a lion. Ufigo'o hadov, and then he meets up with the bear, this is Madai. Al Shem, Va'aru, and behold, Chevo Achare, another animal, Tinyana, Damye Ledov, that is similar to a, looks like a bear. And then there's another number of sukkim that deal with different animals that each one describes another goddess. But then, we come to four lines from the bottom, Ubo Habayit. The Pasuk in Amos says, he passed the Ari, and he passed the Dove, Ubo Habayit, and he comes into the house
And what does Habayit mean? Shehoyah Habayit Kayam. There is a golus that takes place while the Bet HaMikdash exists. Unushacho HaNochosh, and the snake bites in Zu Edom. Golos Yavon is different than every other exile by virtue of the fact that Golos Yavon takes place in Eretz Yisrael at the time of the Bet HaMikdash. The Bet HaMikdash exists during the entire period of Golos Bava, Golos Yavon. Then he brings a Medrash brings another pasuk, a pasuk from Shir Hashirim, Pischi li achosi, open up the door for me, my sister, Zu Bavel. Rayosi, my wife, Zumadai. Yonosi, my dove, that's Yavon. Tamasi is Edom. Why was Yavon called Yonati? Shekoyime Yavon Hoya Bet HaMikdash Kayom. During all of the days of Yavon, the Bet HaMikdash existed. And Israel brought sacrifices of doves on the Mizbeach. The next Medrash deals with the Pasuk at the beginning of Torah. And the earth was Tohu Vavohu, the Choshech al Pnei Tohom, in darkness, V'ruach al-Kim al-Achepet. So the Medrash says, V'ha'aretz ha'ita Tohu Zehu Golus Bavel. Tohu is Golus Bavel. As it says, Ra'iti et ha'aretz, I saw the land v'hinei Tohu, and Yirmiyahu is talking about Bavel. Uvohu zeh golus madai, because we have the pasuk Vayavhilu that has in it the words Bohu, they hasten to bring Haman. The Choshech zu golus Yavon. Golus Yavon is called Choshech, shehecheshicha ineim shel Yisrael b'gzeroteihem, because they darkened the eyes of Israel with their decrees. Shehayta omeret lehem, because Yavon are the ones who said to them, Kitfu lachem al kedem ashor, she'en lam chelek v'lekei Yisrael, write on the horns of your oxen that you have no share in the God of Israel. They wanted to sever the relationship between Klal Yisrael and the Rabbeinu Shlomo. All right? So we know that Yavon is darkness. We know that Yavon takes place at the time of the Bet HaMikdash. Now we need two other sources. Number 8 is the Rambam. Rambam says, "Bimei Bayit Sheni, in the days of the second Bet HaMikdash, Tzotz HaMinut BiYisrael V'yatzu HaTzedokin." Minus, heresy began to shoot out in Yisrael, and out came the Tzedokin. Mehera Yovedu. Mehera Yovedu. The Rambam doesn't pull any punches, and he says, may they be lost speedily, destroyed speedily. Sheinu Maminim B'Torah Shebal Peh, they don't believe Torah Shebal Peh, V'hoyu Omrin. And then the Rambam goes on to explain, because this appears in the Rambam, in Hilchot Avodat Yom HaKippurim, the Tzedukim, those who believed in Torah Shebichtav but did not, but rejected Torah Shebal Peh, they believed that the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur, when he brings the Ketoret into the Kodesh HaKodoshim, the one time a year that the Kohen Gadol goes into the Kodesh HaKodoshim, he's supposed to put the pan with the incense on the coals before he goes in, and when it begins to smoke, he takes it and he goes into the Kodesh HaKodoshim. But Chazal, the Rambam brings me Pi Ashmua. We learned it from Chachmei Yisrael, going all the way back to Sinai, that what the Torah is telling the Kohen Gadol is he's supposed to go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and in the Holy of Holies, there he is to put the pan with the incense onto the coals and wait until the smoke begins to rise. And therefore, Rambam quotes the first Mishnah in Masechet Yoma. First Perek of Masechet Yoma, where it says that Erev Yom Kippur in the morning, the Chachmei Yisrael would have the Kohen Gadol take an oath. He had to swear that he was going to do the Avodas Yom HaKippurim the way he had been taught. Hu Porei Shuvocha, V'hein Porei Shuvochem. He turns to the side and cries. They turn to the side and cry.
He cries because they suspected him. They cry because they had to suspect a Kohen Gadol that he might go against Torah at the holiest moment of the year, the moment that he enters Kodesh HaKadosh. So that means something happened during the period of Bayit Sheni that Minus heresy began to arise in Israel. One more source, and this is most probably the most frightening one of them all. Number six is the Torah Kohanim in Parashat Chukotai. In the Torah Chukot says, V'rodu bachem son eichem, your enemies will rule over you. Ke'ilu God is saying, She'eni ma'amid aleichem elomikem ubachem. There are going to rise up against you, mikem from you, and into you. It's going to be your own people. You are going to experience a period of time when your own people are going to be your own worst enemies. Nations of the world, when they attack Klal Yisrael, they take what's out in the open. But when it's our own people who know the ins and outs of Klal Yisrael, they will enter the inner portals of the Jewish neshama and commit violence. Terrible, terrible klala in the Chukosa. Terrible klala. So how is it? Why did it happen? Why did it happen? So first, Rav Hutner says that it all goes back, as everything has to go back, to Maisa Avos Siman Labanim. Something that happened to the Avos is a siman to the children afterwards. There's a Gemara in Brachas where the Gemara says, Kol HaKode Avraham, Avram, Ober Ba'asei, anybody who calls Avram Avinu, calls him Avram, is over, he transgresses a positive commandment. Because it says, Lo yikore ot shimcha Avram, your name is no longer going to be Avram, but your name is going to be Avram. Ah, but there's a similar pasuk by Yaakov, that your name will no longer be Yaakov, your name is going to be Yisrael. There is no issa to call Yisrael Yaakov. So the Gemara says, why? Because Hodar Ahavre Krod, the Pasuk itself later on refers to Yaakov as Yaakov. So obviously the name Yisrael is an added name, but not a name to replace completely the name Yaakov. Why indeed isn't Yaakov's name changed completely? Why was he called Yisrael? Because of that nocturnal struggle with the Malach Sarah Shal Esav. He calls him Yisrael because Sarita Melukim V'Anoshim, you struggled with men and God, Batuchal, and you succeeded. So he calls him Yisrael. But when he sees that he's unable to vanquish Yaakov, he hits him B'Kaf Yerechol, in the loins. And Yaakov begins to limp. And he limps until the sun rises. Which means that his victory over the Malach was not a total victory. He emerged nifga. He emerged weakened from that encounter. Which means it's not really Sarita im Elokim v'Anoshim v'Tuchal. When will it be, Yisrael? When the sun rises, the sun of Geula rises at the end of history, or the beginning of history, then Yisrael is going to be completely Yisrael. Chazal say, why did he strike the Kaf Hayarech? Because what he was striking at is Tzadikim v'tzidkonios v'dodo shel shmad. Righteous people in a generation when Jews are being forced, being coerced to adopt or accept other beliefs and other religions. That there will be a weakness, and that weakness comes from the blow that was administered by Sarah Shal Esav. When does it begin? When does it begin to show itself? It begins to show itself in the days of Greece. Why? Because Greece is choshech. Greece is choshech. There is no worse darkness than that. There is no worse darkness than a fellow Jew who stands ready to betray his own people. That's darkness. The first Gzeiras Hashmad was therefore, the first Gzeiras Hashmad was the Gzeira of Yavon, and therefore this phenomenon begins to appear in the days of Yavon. Which therefore means that the ness in the days of Hanukkah is a victory not only over the Yavonim, but it's also a victory over the Midyavnim. The Maharal Prague. The Maharal Prague wrote a sefer on Hanukkah called Ner Mitzvah. And the Maharal says the following. The whole sefer is based on this idea. The menorah served a special function in this victory over Greece. What was so special about the menorah? Because the menorah represents chokhmah, wisdom. Harotze lahachim, one wants to be wise, yadrim, he should go to the south. The menorah stands in the southern point in the Beit HaMikdash. So what makes the menorah so important? What makes the menorah so important is the onslaught of Greece was with Greek wisdom. That was their weapon. That was the weapon. Remember, they didn't destroy the Beit HaMikdash, but they desecrated it. They didn't pour out the oil, but they defiled it. They want the Beit HaMikdash to be there, they want the oil to be there, but they want to penetrate and defile it. That's what they want to do. The weapon that they use against Klal Yisrael is Greek wisdom. And the fact is that Greek wisdom was formidable. There most probably was never a period like the period of the wise men of Greek in all of history. We're talking about Socrates and Plato and Aristotle and Archimedes and Demetrius, the chulu, we're talking about a group of people whose minds were gigantic. The means that they used was chokhmah. By the way, what's very fascinating is that since that period, about 2,500 years ago, of great Greek wisdom, Greece became absolutely nothing. There wasn't another significant Greek until Anthony Quinn. There's been nothing. And that's most probably a result of the Nes Chanukah. Because the weapon used against Klal Yisrael was Chochmas Yavonis. It's because of that Chochmah left Yavon. Yavon became nothing after that. There was a great Greek empire. There were great, Alexander the Great, given a Talmud from Aristotle. We're talking about great wisdom that has impacted on the world ad hayom hazeh. I'll point out how. You'll see the way it has impacted not only on the world until hayom hazeh. It has impacted on the Klal Yisrael in a negative way ad hayom hazeh until today. The onslaught was an onslaught of wisdom. And there were Jews who could not stand up to that weapon. So since the struggle is a struggle of wisdom of Greece against the wisdom of Torah, therefore the Nes is going to come via menorah, which represents Chochmas HaTorah, Kiner Mitzvah, the Torah. So Rav Hutna has one kasha. There's one other gezerah. There was one other gzeira, another decree of Yavan, that simply doesn't fit into everything that we're saying. It was an ugly gzeira. Have it on the second side, down at the bottom. Gemara in Shabbos says, Isha vaday madlika. A woman definitely has to light the Hanukkah menorah. Domer Yishuv and Levi. Yishuv and Levi said, Noshim chayovas ben Hanukkah. Women are obligated in the midst of Ner Hanukkah. Sha'af hein hoyu ba'oto anes. They were also part of that miracle. Right below it, the end of the second line, you have the Rashi there. Hoyu ba'oto anes. Shegozru yavonim, the Greeks decreed, al kol besulos hanesuos. Any virgin who gets married, he boils the tafsa tchila. She has to submit to the local Greek officer first. God, anything as ugly as this? Vayedei isha nasa hanes. And then also we know that the miracle came through a nes, a woman Yehudit. If the onslaught of Greece against the Jewish people is one of wisdom, where does something as low as this come in? Is this a weapon of Greece as well? Doesn't fit into what Greece is supposed to be. So he says the following. Greece wanted to blur the distinction between Jew and non-Jew. They wanted to diminish the intensity of Jewish feeling. They wanted to remove Hamavdil bein Kodesh l'chol, bein Or l'choshech. Who's Choshech? Choshech is Greece. Shehech Hashichu Eineim Shei Yisrael. They wanted to blur the distinction between Kodesh and Chol. There's Kodesh, and what did Greece do? Greece made it Chol. They wanted to erase, remove the distinction between Yisrael la'amim. Therefore they decreed against Bris Milah. They wanted to decree, remove the difference bein Yom HaShvi'i l'Sheshes Yamei HaMaaseh, between Shabbos and the rest of the days of creation. So they decreed against Shabbos. They want to remove the uniqueness of the Jewish people. They want to erase it. There's one other way in which to erase it. Do you know how you erase it? If you can inflict a wound on the gene pool of Klal Yisrael. If you can enter the very portals of Yeluda, of giving birth, and defile that, then you have removed Kedushas Yisrael. Then there's no Havdalah, there's no Bein Kodesh Nechol, there's no Bein Yisrael La'amim, there's no Bein Yom HaShvi'i L'Sheshes Yisrael La'amaseh. The Gzera that called the Sula, a virgin who is married must submit first to the local Greek governor, was to defile, just as they had defiled the Beis HaMikdash, just as they had defiled the Shemen. That's exactly what they wanted to do. And the ultimate way in which to do it, to erase the differences, to blur the lines, and ultimately to create such a mixture of blood that you won't know who's a Jew anymore. That's what Greece wanted to do. I've said it often here, that I'm a peace-loving person who minds his own business. It sounds familiar, right? So here, I come to shul to daven. This shul, I like davening at this shul. So Friday night, one of the members of this shul, who's a lawyer, comes over and he gives me something to read. Now you should know, I will need another 10 lifetimes to read all the stuff that people hand me to read. A friend of mine from the States sent me a present this week, Ben Zion Netanyahu's book on the Inquisition. That's Binyamin's father. He's a historian. The book has 1,200 pages. I tell you, I came back from the post office in Harno schlepping this book. And he tells me that members of his family have made it to page 250, 300, but he expects of me to do better than that. It's formidable. I think I'm going to have to take a week off someplace in a lot and just go down with that book. But here, fella gave me, you know, 3 pages. I can handle 3 pages. By the way, I'm going to try and read the Netanyahu book. The glances that I took at it, it's fascinating. It's most probably the definitive history of the Inquisition. The roots of the Inquisition. And amazing. I don't know where men put together all of that information. So here is an article that came out very recently in one of the magazines of the lawyers. What is it? The legal what profession? I think Orech Hadin. Huh? The magazine seems to be called Orech Din. It's written by a woman, Chana Avnor, who is a retired justice. And the article is, she wants to figure out Aaron Barak, Chief Justice. She says she can't understand what he's doing, because there is absolutely no precedent in either British law, Roman law, common law, for a court to intervene and, in a sense, interfere in the legislative end of government or the executive end of government. Barak seems to be living with the idea, give me a good translation, svirut. What makes sense? Huh?
Reasonable.
Good word. No, he's going to decide what's reasonable and what's not reasonable. That's his shita. The court has the right to decide what's reasonable and what's not reasonable. Regardless of what is the problem is the fact Aaron Barak higia lebet hamikdash lebet hamishpat. Wait. He came to the Bet HaMishpat Meha Academia. He came straight from the ivory towers of academia. He came to the High Court. Yotzar Teorio Mishpatit. He created a legal theory, HaMistamechet, that is based on, and it leans on, HaPhilosophia HaYavonit, Greek philosophy, the Toratosho Socrates. It's all based on Socrates. The name of the article is Barak v'ikvot Socrates. Barak, in the footsteps of Socrates. What did Socrates say? And this was classic Greek, and we'll understand it. He felt that real power and the right to rule belonged to the wise. Wisdom is the only way to make decisions. He was not too happy with the democracy in which Pshutei Am would get together and they would vote. What do they know? And therefore he wanted to impose an idea of what he considers reasonable, what he, Socrates, considers reasonable, that's reasonable. And what all these other common folk consider reasonable is not reasonable. We know, of course, what happened with him. He became an enemy of the people, and he was put to death. But that was the sheet of Socrates. Svirut. And he's the one who will decide what Svirut is. It's not what your Svirut is, or your Svirut. It's only what Aaron Barak's Svirut is. Now, I didn't write this. I just read from an article that, from the Lishkat Orchei Din. I just read from an article. Do you understand what this Chana Avnor is saying over here? That Greek philosophy continues to penetrate Klal Yisrael to the detriment of the Jewish people. Didn't only start then and it ended then. It started then and it continues throughout all of history. And therefore we will have our Mityavnim today like we had at any time. I'm calmly reading the Haaretz 2 days ago. Monday morning. Monday morning, we're talking about a country that was completely in anguish, in pain, anger. Front page of the Haaretz, Yoel Marcus. Yoel Marcus says, there are times that words are finished. The blood, the fear, the shattered bodies, the people of the Chesed Shel Emes, the ambulances, the horror, we've had it. It's the end. Well, what more is there to write about what the eye sees? Here in the mid, we're living through Pigua after Pigua in Afula, near Pardiskana, in the center of Yerushalayim, the lowest city of Haifa. It's built in Yisbal. We can't take it anymore. It's 53 years. We can't take it. It's over. We have to give Arafat an ultimatum. And then he asks, Shum medina ba'olam lo hayta sovelet yom achar yom. There's no other nation in the world that would suffer day after day, chodesh achar chodesh, month after month, liyot matara lepiguim, to be a target for attacks, lelo avchana be'ezracha. And then he comes to his concluding question. Are we supposed to live through a period of time? Sheha uvda, sheha kanaim vafanatim holchim v'nasim tzodkim b'nevoteim hashkorot sheim lo yafsiku l'harog banu pashut motziya mihadat. He says what makes him crazy is the zealous and the fanatics, the mishugoyim, who have been prophesying all along that this guy will never stop and they'll keep killing us, that they're right. He can't take that. Pigua, no. One pigua, two pigua, three pigua, four. Big deal. But that the kanoim and the fanatim should be right, can't be. He can't take that. That's built in his bow. Maybe you should stop and think that maybe the kanoim and the fanatim were the pikrim. They were the intelligent ones. And you people who believed that Arafat was going to fight his fellow Arabs and kill them in order to save us from terrorism, maybe you were the kanoim and you were the fanatim. You are the ones who were the Mashiachistim that thought that peace is going to be brought to this country through Arafat. That doesn't occur to me. This is what a man, an intelligent man, writes. After all that has happened, we still are we're the kanoim and the fanatim. Unbelievable. This is this is chokhmah. You understand? Chokhmah gone awry. And then I have to get something else off my chest before I go to a wedding and an engagement party. No, for simchas I have peyach. Don't get me wrong. I'm going. I was very, very disappointed. This morning, listening to the radio, I was very disappointed. I would have thought that at a moment of such crisis, we would learn from the United States of America. There are no longer in America today Republicans and Democrats. They're all Americans who are fighting a battle against terrorism. Before Sharon got up to speak last night, he was already being attacked by members of his cabinet. This morning, you had to hear some of these guys labor on unbelievable. Can't they, for the life of them, learn that there's such a thing as Her Majesty's loyal opposition? Don't they understand that in a moment of such crisis, you come together? If you have any complaints, shush still. I'll tell you, I even got a little upset. These guys are... They're too much chachomim. If I hear it once more from somebody, I'm going to break my television. That the so-called battle that is now taking place, maybe it will be, I hope it will be, a real battle against terrorism is inspired by one person. Inspired by one person. The man behind it all is Benjamin Netanyahu. Sharon is frightened of Netanyahu. I don't know. I'm not ready to accept it. The pain that we were in, he was just as pained, and maybe more pained because he's responsible. The buck stops by him, and he promised that there's going to be bitachon in Sharon. I think that we have a right to give the man the benefit of the doubt that he's doing it because Klal Yisrael needs it and because it's his responsibility to do it. Not everything is politics. Everybody here sees things only one way. Mizanin Gevorah are such great chachomim that we interpret everything in terms of politics and Memshelet Achdut Lumit. I think that the man has a heart. I think that the man has done so much for Klal Yisrael in all of the years that he served. He was pained by Meitzoy Shabbos. He was in great pain by Sunday. He was in great pain for all of the other pigun just as we were. And it may have just been the point. Yeah, but maybe he didn't want to go into a milchama kolelet. Not everything. Over here, everything, there's an angle. Nobody can see anything straight anymore. And if you're the one to pick up the angle, then you're the chacham that they're going to listen to on TV. Maybe it's just plain feeling of great sense of responsibility at such a grave period in Jewish history. Maybe that's what it's all about. Why doesn't that occur to anybody? I don't know why that doesn't occur to anybody. Because they said our cap over here that everything has to be seen in terms of votes and heen and hair. Nobody can be honest anymore. Nobody can do anything because it's what has to be done. I don't believe that's true. I simply don't believe that's true. It's all from the great Chochma. Chochmas Yavan penetrated the minds of Klal Yisrael and created the ugliness that we've seen of Jews simply being unable and unwilling to join with fellow Jews in a struggle against a common enemy. Shandana Harpa. I'm looking forward to a Nes Chanukah. All of these guys will get the works and Uvolet Zion Goel. A happy Hanukkah to everybody.